You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Thank you all for being in the rain and coming to this game. And I'm going to say this for everybody listening. If you have tickets and you're not going to use them, I guess you could go online and give them to the university.
Absolutely.
They'll give them away. Or even better yet, give them to your neighbor. Here, do you want to go to an Arkansas game? Think about the Kansas game, what that game was like, because 50% of the building were people who could never get in the building. And it was made their month being able to be in there and enjoy that. So don't sit on tickets. Either give them away or we'll give them away because, you know, this environment is so good. Now, I'm going to tell you, anybody that came here today in that weather, crazy, and I appreciate you.
John Calipari, after Arkansas's win over Pacific last night, the Razorbacks won 91-72 at Bud Walton Arena. Again, a very sparse crowd in attendance for this game between the Razorbacks and the Tigers. That's three straight early season games where there hasn't been a full house at Bud Walton Arena. The tickets are sold, obviously. People aren't showing up. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But for John Calipari to take the time during his radio show last night or during the post game on the Razorback Sports Network to address it, obviously it's something that's on his mind. It's certainly on the mind of a lot of fans this morning, and we'll get to that here in just a little bit. But Anthony Christensen in studio with me. We'll kind of go over the game here for a moment. It was a closer-than-expected game. Arkansas was a 21.5-point favorite, and they end up winning by 19, but this is one of those games where the final score doesn't necessarily tell the story of the game. Arkansas only up by two about midway through the second half, and then the defense began to clamp down, Anthony, and a Pacific team that seemed like they were hitting everything they took in the first half looked like their legs started to get a little bit tired. They started to have some misses, and Arkansas was able to pull away. Really good night for Arkansas shooting the ball, especially at the free throw line. They hit 20 of 25 free throws, including 18 of 23 after halftime. And I thought the combination of getting to the line and clamping down defensively were the two big keys to the game.
Yeah, and you mentioned obviously getting to the line. I mean, they were in the double bonus before the 12-minute second half media timeout, which made for a which made for a long night. I was at Bud Walton Arena until like 11 o'clock, I think. But no, I mean, they found success driving to the basket, which, I mean, is kind of what they want to do. I mean, John Calipari said that they're a very good driving team, and you know, we saw that in spurts last night, especially in that second half. Defensively, obviously, sometimes you're going to have a team that comes in and shoots really well, which I think Pacific obviously did. They made some adjustments in the second half. They kind of came into the game really kind of focusing on protecting the driving lanes, raking, and just kind of preventing them from getting to the basket, because that's kind of where Pacific has found, you know, the success that it's had is kind of getting to the basket. They weren't that great of a three-point shooting team coming into the night, which is kind of ironic given how well they started out shooting. But then obviously they finish, I think, missing 13 of their last 15 shots. Obviously some good defensive adjustments, but some of that also kind of comes with, like you said, Pacific kind of losing their legs a little bit, maybe some fatigue. They also had a short rotation, just kind of more by design and less by injuries, if I'm not mistaken. But
Arkansas down to seven players last night. Trevin Brazil didn't play with that ankle injury that he sustained last week against Troy. Jonas Adu was held out of the game. Calipari said afterward that he thinks they might have one of those two back by the time they get on the court Friday against Little Rock. He did not say who. We did hear Matt Zimmerman say during the pregame show yesterday that Brazil was back, quote, doing some things, but he's not full go yet. So, you know, we'll see what that means. Both of them were on the bench. Neither of them dressed out. And obviously neither of them played. Arkansas down to seven players. They had some injuries that they had to deal with during the game. Calipari said that Carter Knox might have dislocated his finger during the first half. He actually came back and continued to play, which shows a good bit of toughness, I would say, on his part. And then, Nelly Davis, he went out holding his wrist at one point in the second half. Obviously, that's been an injury for him. It really calls into it brings to the forefront this decision that Calipari made back in the spring that he was only going to sign about nine scholarship players. And I think some players are on scholarship, but he's what they call, what does he even call them, walk-on scholarship?
Walk-on scholarship guys, reserves, whatever.
Basically
you
guys
call
that aren't going to play this year unless they just have to, you know, get that far down the bench. You know, he's mentioned that at UMass he had a really good team at UMass that had a 6-man rotation. And so he's done this in his career. But man, with the injuries, they're skating on thin ice with the injuries right now. And one of the things that I think has maybe flown under the radar a little bit is that Arkansas hasn't fouled a whole lot this year. If they ever get into a situation where they're fouling a lot and, you know, say they've got a player or two still out, that could really, you know, come back to hurt them.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned, obviously the decision to go with 8-9 scholarship guys, like he's kind of been talking about since he got hired, bold, I guess. If you want to say it like that,
I understand where he's coming from.
You absolutely understand it, because he was talking about how, you know, he wants to coach up all the guys, not just, you know, the
and it's
rotation.
Not just that, but you know, if you go out and you get 13 scholarship players, and they're all blue chip, you know, type players, some of them aren't going to play.
Yeah,
and they don't play, and then all of a sudden you got some locker room issues that start to fester up that can hurt your team too. So I totally understand where he's coming from. But that was always the concern, was if you go with that few guys, you better hope that you have a year where you don't have the injury bug. And quite honestly, they've had the injury bug here early.
Yeah, no, and that's always kind of been the concern. And his response to that has always been, well, you lose one or two guys, then you're going to have 6-7 really happy guys just because they're going to be playing all the minutes. But, I mean, like you mentioned, I mean, that could – It could still hurt them. You know, you get into some foul trouble, like especially in the front court right now. I mean, their only big guy right now is Zvonimir Ivicic. So if he gets into foul trouble,
or commits 7 turnovers in a game like he did last night,
yeah, or commits 7 turnovers in a game, and isn't playing well, you're kind of stuck playing small ball 5 with a Duthiero in the post, which can work, and we saw it work a little bit last night. But mm-hmm. is that going to work against, you know, the Alabamas of the world or the Kentuckys of the world? It's all fine and good if it works against Pacific, but, you know, is that going to work against Illinois or Michigan or, you know, SEC opponents? You know,
And Dave Smart, the Pacific coach, he said that he thought the small lineup that Arkansas went with late in the game when they took Ivicic out, he said that he thought that really started to affect Pacific, made them tired, got into their legs, and they went over 10 minutes without hitting a shot in the second half last night, from about the 11-minute mark to about the 1-minute mark, where they didn't hit a shot. This was what John Calipari had to say. Just kind of his overview of the game last night.
The finish of the game. You saw how you finish a ball game now, how you're supposed to. That made me happy, that we moved it, use clock, score late in the clock, bang, do that twice, the game's over. Now it goes from 12 to whatever, and they don't have enough time and enough attempts to beat you. They have to learn all this. And so today was a good day for that. And we made threes. But you do know, since Baylor, where we started 0-9, that after that, through this game, I think we're at 45-46% of our threes. We're at a high number. We just, you know, we're a little bit confused and weren't as confident as we needed to be. But they're shooting the ball better.
Definitely shooting the ball better. They shot well against Troy, at least in the second half. They got off to a cold start against Troy, but, you know, really for the last three halves, they've shot the ball pretty well from the perimeter. They hit 9 threes last night, nearly had a 10th. DJ Wagner had one that was called a 3 on the court, and then during the TV timeout, it was discovered that he had his foot on the line, so it was changed to a 2-point shot. But the point being that Arkansas shooting a lot better, you know, not only from the perimeter, just overall. I mean, they were 31-52 last night from the floor, 9-21 from three. You like those numbers. Obviously, 20-25 at the free throw line. That's going to help you win a lot of games. Some other stats to know from the game last night: Adutheiro led Arkansas with 23 points. He's really good, really well. And it's not just the points. I mean, he had 6 rebounds. He had 4 steals. Arkansas forced Pacific into 17 turnovers last night. Pacific forced Arkansas into 15, but I thought one of the keys to the game was what they did with the turnovers. Arkansas converted those 17 into 22 points. Pacific only turned the 15 into 9 the other way, and Thero was right there at the forefront of this, you know, getting into the passing lanes, deflecting passes, getting quick run-out dunks. He had 6 dunks last night. I think at least half of those were in transition on fast breaks after a steal. So he had a phenomenal game. Boogie Flan with 20 points last night, shot the ball, I thought, as well as we've seen him shoot it this year, 6 of 10 from the floor, 2 of 4 from 3. He made all 6 of his free throws. Vesic, just 27 minutes, finished with 15 points, 5 rebounds, the 7 turnovers really stand out for him. And then DJ Wagner, his grandfather, Milt, the great Louisville player, was in the stands last night, and he played his best game, at least offensively, for Arkansas this year. He finished with 14 points. So when you're down to 7 players, you need to find some guys that are going to step up and score, and they got that in this game.
Yeah, and you mentioned Adu Thiro. I mean, obviously last season he was kind of that defensive anchor for Kentucky and kind of deferred offensively to guys like, you know Rob Dillingham and Reed Shepard and Antonio Reeves. And now, I mean, we've talked about him before, right? You know, he's kind of come in and kind of become, if not the guy, one of the guys on this Arkansas team. I mean, he's been really good. He's added some range to his game, which maybe you still want to see him kind of utilize that a little bit more. But you know, he's been really good on both sides of the ball. Like Calipari had said after the, I think it was the Baylor game, he said, yeah, he's in attack mode now. So he's kind of taken that role on. But like you mentioned, obviously when you're down to a rotation of 7 guys, you're going to need guys to step up. And when 4 of your 5 starters are in double figures, I mean, that's a good place to be. I mean, it is Pacific, but yeah.
Wagner had 5 assists last night too. Probably the best game that we've seen him, you know, distributing the ball. And I didn't mention Billy Richmond. That was the best we've seen Billy Richmond play last night.
Yes.
9 points in 23 minutes. And, you
he
know, like some
seems
of the other
to
players,
give some serviceable minutes.
Defensively,
he was
in the passing lanes.
Yes, absolutely. He always seems to give some serviceable minutes. I mean, he's not like putting up these, you know, headlining numbers, but I always really enjoy watching Billy Richmond. I mean, he's, like you mentioned, he's a very good defender. He gets in the passing lanes. He gets like a not insignificant amount of blocks too, which is kind of fun to see. But you know, he played well offensively last night too, in kind of that limited action. But no, I've been impressed with Billy Richmond. You know, every time I've kind of seen him, or not maybe not every time, but most of the time when I've seen him, you know, he's not, I wouldn't say he's probably a one and done kind of guy, but you know, he's impressive. He's a good college basketball player.
Arkansas got out to a 27-11 lead, and they were in a zone. And Calipari joked afterward. He said, "I knew they were going to hit a lot of threes." He said, "Every time in my career," because he's not a big zone guy.
Yeah.
He said, "Every time in my career that I've gone zone, it has been, you can almost, you know, guarantee that the other team's going to hit some threes against that zone." And of course, Pacific, just they were shooting out of their minds, it felt like, in the first half, 8 of 18 from 3. But they missed some at the start of the game. I mean, there was a stretch there where it felt like every 3 they took, they were making. They probably made, you know, 5 out of 7 or 6 out of 8 or something like that during that stretch where they were able to get back into the game right before halftime. Arkansas, like we said, clamped down defensively in the second half. They kind of looked like what their reputation has been through the first couple of weeks from a defensive standpoint. And this is what Calipari had to say about the second half defense.
For 13. I would hope we made it tougher for them, but some of it is numbers. You're not making every shot. You're going to miss some, and then you hope they miss 13 in a row. At the end of the game, they end up shooting 40% from the game, and that's our goal every game we play. If we hurt a team 40 or below, we should be okay. Now you got to rebound because they're shooting a low percentage. And we'd like to get 20 assists. We had 17.
So what do we think about this team? I mean, where I keep coming back to is I don't think we've seen them, and I know we haven't seen them reach their full potential. Is there concern about what you're seeing on the court where they're letting these teams, you know, like Troy and like Pacific, really stay with them for a little while? Or do we just chalk it up to the fact that we haven't seen this full team in action yet? I mean, Adu hasn't been healthy. Brazil, I thought he was playing as well as anybody before he got hurt the last game. Like, where do you fall in that spectrum?
I mean, you can kind of be, I think, kind of in the middle. It's not as, you know, doom and gloom as people saying, they've hung around with Lipscomb or Pacific or Troy and lost to Baylor. I think
it could be worse. You could have lost to one of those three teams.
Yeah. So there is that. Defensively, they've been good. I think they've got a top 10 defense right now in terms of, you know, efficiency and just kind of all the things that kind of play into that in KenPom. So they've been good on defense. And I mean, there obviously have been the injuries and everything as well. But you still want to see them play better offensively, in which we've kind of seen them shoot the ball better the last three halves of basketball and everything like that. But, you know, you're still kind of waiting to see, you know, John L. Davis really kind of step in and kind of take over and kind of be your go-to, you know, shooting guy from the perimeter.
Calipari said last night he needs them to be their assassin.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So you're still kind of waiting to see him kind of step up and kind of take on that role of being the primary, you know, three-point shooter, or kind of taking that role on and, you know, driving to the basket, which we saw a little bit of that against Lipscomb. But we, you know, maybe you still want to see that kind of continue, or maybe you still want to obviously see how things look with a fully healthy Jonas Adu or a fully healthy Trevin Brazil. So I think there's a little bit of a give and take there. I mean, it's not all doom and gloom if you're an Arkansas fan, I don't think, just because, I mean, you're still 3-1, which I think at this point of the season, you're probably going to take that.
That's where you thought you'd be. That's where I thought they'd be at this point. I was going to be surprised if they beat Baylor. So I thought they'd be 3-1, but it always works out like this. Like the football team, they're 5-5. I think most people thought they'd be 5-5 at this point in the season. But there's always that, well, we didn't know it was going to be like this to get to that record. And I think we're kind of going through a similar thing with basketball right now. Arkansas fell to 20th in the AP poll. This was released yesterday before the game, down from 18 last week. They play 8 teams that are ranked this week. One of them they've already played. Baylor, who's number 13, still on the schedule. You got Auburn, number 3. Bama, number 8. Kentucky has jumped up to number 9. I think they deserve it after the way they beat Duke the other day. Tennessee's at 11. Florida's at 21. A&M is 23. And Illinois, who the Razorbacks play next week on Thanksgiving, is number 25. Ole Miss, Texas, Mississippi State, Miami, and Michigan also on the schedule. All of those teams are receiving votes. So I think the voters are kind of where we are. They're a good team. They're not maybe playing up to the level that we thought they would before the season. On the attendance, for Calipari to come out, and this isn't the first time that he's mentioned this either. I think, I don't know that he's ever mentioned it post game. Maybe he has. I know he's mentioned it on his radio show that he has out at Sassy's, which is tonight, by the way, because of the game last night. They moved it to Tuesday this week. But this is something that he's noticing, and it's hard not to notice it. And midweek games or weeknight games, they're always going, they for years they have been somewhat low attended events. And I've mentioned this before, you know, Arkansas is kind of unique in that, you know, a good portion of your ticket buying base is not necessarily, you know, within a 30-45 minute range of Fayetteville. And I think that contributes to maybe why we're seeing some of these empty seats. But at the same time, there was such excitement about him being hired. They sold all their tickets in like 26 days this summer. And so there was so much excitement about that. And, you know, I don't think he came here thinking that he was going to be coaching in a half-empty arena. And I don't know that you know, it's not like he's going to resign and go away because people aren't showing up. But it's obviously something that's bothering him. It's something that's certainly bothering a lot of fans who, you know, some of whom probably wanted tickets, but they couldn't get it because they didn't have a certain, you know, financial status or a certain status with the Razorback Foundation or whatever the case might be. And, you know, it's just unfortunate to you know, hear from, you know, so many people like, hey, I'd love to go to the game, but, you know, the tickets have already been sold and people are just sitting on tickets. And for whatever reason, a good number of people. It's not like this is just, you know, 1,000 seats that are empty. These are giant, you know, maybe not swaths of seats, but you know, you can certainly tell when you're in the arena or watching on TV that there are a number of seats that are not being used. And I guess it's just surprising based on the excitement that was there for Calipari when he was hired.
You're telling me you don't think Pacific has people from Little Rock driving?
I do not.
Oh.
No. Joe Klein came up from Little Rock last night, but he was working.
Yes. He was working. I mean, yeah, I you can tell it kind of does or has bothered him a little bit.
And it's not going to fill up, by the way, before SEC play.
I wouldn't imagine so.
There's going to be an uptick this weekend or Friday night when they play Little Rock for a couple of reasons. Maybe three.
Friday, home
Calipari,
football game.
Calipari talking about it. is going to, you got the Darryl Walker, you know, not that Darryl Walker makes people come in the door, but, you know, he's one of them. Mm-hmm. He's a Razorback. And so I think there are people who are like, hey, I want to come watch that. It's every game. It's like, how many, you know, points can you get that are going to be interest points to get people there? And so Darryl Walker's an interest point. Obviously, what Calipari said last night, I think, is going to, you know, prompt some people to use their tickets. And it's the night before a football game. Even though I don't think it's going to be a great football attendance on Saturday when they play Louisiana Tech, it is the night before a football game.
The Bulldogs
game.
Don't get the juices flowing?
And there's going to be a lot of people who, no, but there's going to be a lot of people who, you know, are in town for football who say, hey, we're going to do the Daily Double. We're going to go basketball on Friday. We're going to go football on Saturday. And so it's a Friday night. And so all of these, it's going to be a better attendance, but I don't think they're going to fill that arena up until maybe Florida, their first weekend game of the SEC season. Here's my prediction. First time they play in front of a full house in a, quote, home game is when they play UCA
Maryland
in Little Rock.
Shore.
When they play UCA in Little Rock in December.
Not Maryland Eastern
because
Shore.
That game, you're messing with me. Because that game in Little Rock, North Little Rock, sorry, Chamber of Commerce, the game in North Little Rock is going to be, you know, it's that event. And it's going to be the only time that some of those people are going to go to a game. And maybe some of these are the people who they can't get their hands on a ticket at Bud Walton, but they can get their hands on a ticket down there in North Little Rock. And so that's my prediction. That'll be the first full house that they play in this year in Arkansas. They might play in a full house against Miami down there. Mm-hmm. But in Arkansas, I think it'll be December 14th against UCA.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like you said, they don't have a lot of home games that are or true home games, I guess I should say, that are really going to get, like I said, the juices flowing. I mean, Little Rock will be fun. Maybe you'll get some UALR fans traveling up for that one as well.
Maybe a little bit.
But, yeah, and then obviously, I mean, their other home games in the non-conference are Maryland Eastern Shore, which is, I think, rated 360 of the 362 teams in KenPom. Didn't have a coach until July, I don't think. Just a lot of interesting things happening at Maryland Eastern Shore. And then they've got UTSA and North Carolina A&T in Oakland before SEC play starts at home. So it's a... Yeah, it's not the best.
I mean, look, people want a name brand. They want a name brand, and, you know, that's people run out on Black Friday to get deals on Nike. They don't run out to get deals on Members Mark. You know what I mean? It's just how it works. Mm-hmm. And there's no brand names at Bud Walton this year. There's the three teams they played, and then, you know, still coming up, and I'm talking about a non-conference, there's Little Rock, Maryland Eastern Shore, Texas San Antonio, North Carolina A&T, and Oakland. That's it.
I mean,
Oakland for basketball junkies like you. Oakland moves the needle. If you are, hey, I've you know, it's a rainy night and I'm in, you know, Van Buren. Do I really want to drive up for Oakland on a weeknight?
You don't want to drive up for Greg Campy?
It's a Monday night against Oakland. You're not going to.
But it's Greg Campy.
You're not going to mess me up today. Hey, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. It's the most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports, analysis, latest in recruiting from Richard Davenport, unique stories on all your favorite teams. You can subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Anthony, thanks for being here. When we come back, Christina Long will be in studio with us to talk about Razorback football. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Also want to tell you, Kyle May is coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. That'll be Thursday in 2 days, November 21st at noon. Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seats now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. Kyle May, the executive director of the Arkansas Edge NIL Collective, will be at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club on Thursday. And if you are listening to us, we thank you. If you're watching us on YouTube, thank you as well. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple or Spotify by searching Whole Hog Sports, or you can watch a video version of the podcast on YouTube by searching Whole Hog Sports. Hope you leave us a review. It'll help us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, but more importantly, it'll help other people find our podcast. As always, we appreciate you listening, watching, wherever you are. We hear from people all the time. It always amazes me. You know, it's, hey, I live in this place and I listen to you. It's like, thank you. It really does. It's a great feeling whenever we hear that. Christina Long is here. Sam Pittman spoke to reporters yesterday. The Razorbacks will play Louisiana Tech this week, the home finale for the Razorbacks. They are a 23-point favorite over the Bulldogs, who are 4-6. But when you look at Louisiana Tech's schedule, there have been a lot of close calls in there. I think they've got 3 overtime losses. They had a game where they lost in overtime because another team threw a Hail Mary at the end and forced overtime. They beat Western Kentucky last week, who was number one in and still is number one in the Conference USA. It was their first conference loss. This is what Sam Pittman had to say about playing the Bulldogs.
I think the big thing there is this game is more about us and how we play. You know, we have to play hard. You know, we have to play hard. We have to challenge ourselves. If we've gotten in the past where we've done well at times and we've done not well at times against teams that aren't in our league as far as names on the side of their helmet. And we have to get better. I think the thing that I'll talk about is getting better. Certainly we have 2 games left, not just 1. So we have to continue to try to improve. And then our consistency has to be there. So we need to put 2 games defensively where we're flying to the football back to back. And then offensively, we've got to take care of the football better. We have to throw, we have to catch it better. We've got to protect it better. There's a lot of things that we got to get better at, especially to win this game. This game will, winning, if we can win, it'll allow us for not just another one, but then another one after that. And we just have to continue to improve. So I think that's what we'll talk about a little bit more than even what Louisiana Tech's been able to do lately.
Arkansas enters with the 5-5 record. If they win, they're going to a bowl game. They've missed out the last 2 games on their chance to clinch bowl eligibility. Of course, they played 2 really good teams, Texas and Ole Miss at home. But they want to, Christina, avoid what happened last year. And it's 2 different circumstances. When they came back to Fayetteville last year, they were 3-6. And they finished the year with 3 straight home games. And they weren't able to get bowl eligible. They didn't play well in really any of those games. They did beat FIU, but they didn't play that well that night. They want to avoid that on so many levels. Number one, you can't lose to Louisiana Tech. But you know, if they can't beat them this weekend, which I don't think is going to happen, I think Arkansas is going to win this game. I think the point spread. The point being, though, you really put yourself you put yourself in the corner with Missouri coming up next week. This is just one of those games where it's got the feelings of it could be a little bit more uncomfortable than people expect. But at the end of the day, I would think Arkansas is able to, you know, do what they're supposed to do.
Right. You've got to have this one if you're Arkansas. And I think that they will. I think I was surprised when I started doing some Louisiana Tech research last week for our little head-to-head thing that we do in the magazine that we'll talk about probably tomorrow. I had assumed that they were pretty bad just based on their record. And you know, coming into the season, Sonny Cumbie maybe was on the hot seat. You know, they were coming off a bad year, and then actually looking into what they've done, I don't think they're that bad. I mean, Arkansas should still take care of business. They need to get a big win here, and I think that they should. But yeah, like you said, they've played a lot of close games. Their largest loss was 10 points to NC State, which I feel like they're kind of comparable to Arkansas. I think they're maybe have the same record. And so, you know, that was, and that game was tied in the fourth quarter. So it's not, you know, a given. I think this could be a little bit more competitive than people expect. But Arkansas has to be able to and should be able to take care of business.
NC State lost to Tennessee by 42.
Yeah. Okay. Think, so maybe not comparable to Arkansas.
Arkansas has to go out the window.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
When you look at the
when you have a common opponent, yeah.
You know, Tech, they played some pretty good opponents down the stretch here, and I'm talking about relative to their conference. Sam Houston State only beat them 9-3. Sam Houston State's got an 8-2 record. Jacksonville State's the team that threw the Hail Mary and beat them down at Tech's home stadium in Ruston, 44-37 in overtime. Jacksonville State is 7-3, and then I mentioned Western Kentucky, they're 7-3 as well. And Tech went up there and beat them 12-7 over the weekend. So, you know, relative to their conference, they're being competitive in these games. But you just look at the scores. I mean, you mentioned NC State beat them by 10. Tulsa beat them 23-20 in overtime. FIU beat them 17-10. There's a 14-10 game in here. I mentioned 9-3. 12-7, a lot of low-scoring games.
Yeah, really low-scoring. They play good defense. They don't play very good offense. That's the thing.
Which is interesting because their head coach is Sonny Cumbie, who he made his reputation coming up as one of the Mike Leach disciples in the air raid and obviously had some pretty good success at TCU. He was Gary Patterson's offensive coordinator at TCU. I think he was there the year that TCU kind of got shafted out of the playoff, the year that the committee didn't really want to – this is my personal opinion. They didn't want to pick between TCU and Baylor, so they said, Ohio State, here, you go in. And Ohio State won the national championship.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting to kind of research them and what their strengths and weaknesses are because, yeah, it's been a lot of low-scoring games. They had some quarterback shuffling. You know, they've changed. They've kind of used two at different points. They've started the same guy for most of the year now, but he didn't actually start the season as the starter. And, you know, they haven't really moved the ball particularly well or scored particularly well. But I think defensively they've been solid and they have some real talent there. And so I think that's something that is maybe a little surprising, but at the same time, Arkansas will have and should have a talent advantage over them.
What else stood out to you yesterday from Pittman's press conference?
We talked a lot of personnel stuff with him, and you know, I kind of had forgotten, you know, this is going to be the senior day stuff. People are going to whine. You know, you try not to read too much into who walks at that because some people will walk and decide to come back. Some people won't walk and will leave anyway. But somebody asked about, you know, who you're kind of expecting to have back. How have those conversations been going? And he was saying Josh Braun has the option to come back. He thinks he's going to walk, but he said, you know, that the walking doesn't really mean a whole lot.
Basically,
but
just to clarify, he's going to walk on senior
day. Yes. Sorry.
Not walk away.
Yes. Okay. That's a good point. He is going to walk on senior day. But he said that he is a guy who could come back and he wants to have him back. He's going to try to, you know, convince him to come back. But he said everybody else that's walking, which we don't have a walking on senior day. We don't have a list for that yet. He said all those guys he does not expect back. So again, those, you know, things can always change. I wouldn't put that in stone once you see who's out there for senior day festivities, but it is something to note.
It's the new age of college football. Like, how many times can you walk on senior
right.
day? Because I've seen players here who have walked multiple times on senior day. Multiple players who have walked multiple times.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that was interesting was somebody asked, you know, have you started to talk to Talen Green yet about coming back and things like that? And he said it's probably not time yet, you know, just with what they have in front of them. But he said Monday after the Missouri game, I've got six guys that I'm going to bring in and talk to. Didn't say who those six are, but, you know, he was saying juniors, guys who he wants to have back, and he's going to, you know, try to bring them in and convince them.
I suspect Talen is one of them.
Yes, for
one
sure.
Of the six.
For sure. So, you know, we're getting to that time where we're going to have people, you know, either hitting the portal or leave, you know.
And there's always going to be surprises.
For sure.
There's always going to be players who, you know, you as a fan are looking toward 2025 and saying, you know, I'm expecting this guy to be our first team, whatever. And then, boom, he's gone. And Chris Paul is a great example of this last year. So many people were thinking that they're going to build a defense around Chris Paul in 2025, and the next thing you know, he's at Ole Miss.
And Ole Miss is building a defense around him. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be surprises. It's one of those things that I can't remember exactly which day the portal opens. It's the day after
December
conference championships?
9th. Okay. It's the Monday after the conference championship games.
Okay, yeah.
And so Pippen has this hip surgery that is scheduled I think maybe the second or the third, based on the timeline that he's given us previously. So they got a lot to do on that Sunday and Monday after the Missouri game. Mm-hmm. And the Missouri game's on a Saturday this year instead of a Friday. And so there's a lot of things, I guess, that have to be discussed and kind of decided. Yeah. Because, you know, I don't know what the recovery's like for a hip surgery, but I suspect that, you know, there will be a day or two at least, maybe right. a few that where he's going to have to at least not be fully involved in things.
He said he expects to be calling guys into his office on that Monday. He wants these six guys in his office to talk to him in person. And that's, you know, that's really important. And part of what he said when he was talking about scheduling that surgery is wanting to be on his feet for portal recruiting, you know, trying mm-hmm. to go after guys that way. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a huge time for them. They're going to have a lot to replace, even with, you know, just not even looking at who might transfer.
The portal opens on December 9th. It closes on December 28th. And early signing period is December 4th through the 6th. So a lot to get done that first week after the regular season ends. And for the teams that are playing in the conference championships, it even makes it a little bit crazier because they're going to be in the midst of the playoff, and the playoff is, you know, obviously earlier this year. They're trying to make December easier on coaches. I just don't know that it's ever going to happen the way things are right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
It really
goes.
Is.
So Pittman was also asked about Patrick Kudus. You asked the question, and this is what he had to say about Kudus and the potential to redshirt him. Because remember, he came back, but he came back with five games to play. They're wanting to redshirt him. And you asked the question, will this keep him out of this game against Louisiana Tech? This is what Pittman had to say.
Well, you know, when Pat came back, I had that conversation with him about redshirting, as we all know. Whether we play him, and we'd like to do that, whether we play him this week and don't play him against Missouri, you know, he only has one left. It's still up in the air. But our plans are to do what we told the young man we'd do, and that's to redshirt him. Whether that's next week or whether that's this week, we'll just have to wait and see how we are healthy, health-wise and all that.
So that was kind of a, I guess, to be determined answer on Patrick Kudus. It is interesting, not that Arkansas has had a ton of success offensively since he came back in on the offensive line. Obviously, they played well against Mississippi State. You can say what you want about what happened against Ole Miss. Some of it was a lot of the offensive success was against Ole Miss backups. They didn't play well the other day against a really good Texas defense. It feels odd to me. I understand that you're looking out for the best interest of him. I certainly get that. And, you know, you're thinking about maybe from a development standpoint, hey, if he stays here for long enough, maybe you get, you know, this much better of a player there at the end. But it also feels odd to me that you're taking out a starter just kind of voluntarily for one of your last two games when you're trying to get to bowl eligibility.
And when I do feel like the offensive line has been better with him. They've faced two of the better defensive fronts in the country in these last two games. So, of course, they had some trouble. They are not a tremendous offensive line, but they are better with him in there. So I think, you know, I'm not surprised that Pittman didn't want to say, you know, definitively if he's playing this weekend or not. I would expect that he's not, you know, that if they're going to pick this game to sit him. But, yeah, I mean, I think I understand the choice to, you know, they want to redshirt him. They want to do right by him. You know, one thing Pittman said the last time that we talked about the plans to redshirt him was, hey, I had the conversation with him. I'm not trying to redshirt you so that you can go play for somebody else next year. You know, so he's and he said Patrick told him, you know, I want to be here and I'm going to be here. So, you know, like we said, there's always surprises, but I would expect Kudus to be back. They're banking on that next year. But yeah, I think from a development standpoint, I do think it will help them, especially given the way that they've struggled and the way that development has been an issue for them and how they've had to kind of go and get guys out of the portal and how difficult it is to build an offensive line that way. They're going to need guys that have a little bit more time in the system and time to develop.
You know, Lincoln Riley, I think it is, he's the one that's pushing for like a fifth year of eligibility for all players because – you know, of this, where you have to make these weird decisions about, you know, are we going to play you four games? Are we going to play you more than four? They've obviously, at some point, I think that's probably coming, quite frankly, for a few reasons. You know, they've already kind of loosened up. You know, first off, they loosened up the rules just to give you that four-game option. You didn't used to have that. Now they've loosened up the rules even more that if the bowl game, if you play four regular season games, you can play in the bowl game, and that doesn't count against your eligibility. And, you know, Diego Pavia, the quarterback at Vanderbilt, he has filed a lawsuit against the NCAA saying that their four-year eligibility clock discriminates against players who come from the junior college ranks because once they get into the Division I ranks, they don't have the 4 years to collect NIL like a player who would have gone straight to Division I out of high school. So it's very interesting, the future of this. But I think eventually players will get a fifth year for the reasons, you know, that I just mentioned. I just think it's too complicated the way it is right now. He was also asked, Pittman was yesterday, about the base defense that Arkansas played against Texas. It was three safeties. They did this with some success, obviously some success against Tennessee. They had a good bit of success the other day against Texas with this. Pittman was asked, why not just run this as a base defense? What are the drawbacks to that? And here's what he had to say.
Well, I think when you do that, you're daring people. You're saying, you're telling them we're way more concerned about your wideouts and your quarterback than you are your running back game. And you're saying, hand it off. So there are some teams that come that you play that they're going, okay, we're going to hand it off, you know. And 3 years ago against Georgia, you know, they said, okay, we're going to hand it off 40 times and you better change, you know. And so it has really worked for us because of personnel. And so I think you'll see more and more of that defense for us because we have proven, for the most part, they had a pin and pull series. Texas did that hurt us. But other than that, I felt like we handled the run game there in Tennessee well.
So, again, kind of it feels like we'll see. We'll see whether or not that's going to be the type of defense they use moving forward. But it does, to me, it really stands out that they had so much success against Tennessee and they had a good bit of success against Texas. And then the three games in between were their three worst defensive games of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's what they've done. The changes they've made have worked. And I think some of what we saw this past weekend was some of the personnel changes that they made, you know, putting Keon Stewart back in there, you know, Hudson Clark at corner, Miguel Mitchell, Larry Wirth in there at safety. And so I think some of the personnel changes worked really well. And I think we'll have to see going forward how that goes. You know, Louisiana Tech they tend to pass more than they run, but they're not particularly great at either. So we'll see kind of what they do there. But I think, you know, it's one of those things where I think it depends a lot on matchups. I think it depends a lot on who you're playing. And I think that's kind of what he was getting at is, you know, you can't do this every time necessarily. It depends a lot on your opponent. But at the same time, it has worked so much better for them.
I want to tell you, you can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. Get the most complete Razorback coverage in one location. Subscription will give you 20-plus issues of Hogs Illustrated magazine plus complete access to all of our content at wholehogsports.com. Subscriptions begin at $17 a month. You can join now at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call 479-684-5509. It's November 19th. That means the baseball preview is coming up soon.
It's coming. Yeah, we're going to be working on that in January.
That's my favorite issue that we put out every year. Seems like that's our most popular, too. I mean, people love Razorback baseball. They love reading that preview.
Yeah, we need to figure out what we're going to put in it. I feel like there's so many, you know, so many new faces. There's going to be so many new stories we can put in there.
I got some thoughts. I'll tell you off the air. we got to see, too, who's going to be on the team.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I can't remember what the number was. They had a good number of players, though, that were out in fall ball. They're going to have to cut that roster down. I think they were at 51 in the fall. They got to have a 40-man roster by the time that the season begins. And that doesn't mean they have 11 go away. You know, you can redshirt 3, 4, 5, whatever you want to over that limit. You just can't have more than 40 who are going to be available to you. And it's interesting, we're in the middle of early signing period right now. All of these teams, you know, when and I'm not talking about just Razorback baseball or just baseball teams in general. I'm talking about all sports. They're all signing players right now based on what they think next year is going to look like. There's the preliminary settlement in the House case, but it hasn't been formally approved yet, and it won't be until at least April. And so it's just very interesting. It's a really, really crazy time, I think, behind the scenes for these coaches, because you're promising players full scholarships really for probably the first time, and you're doing it based on something that is not concrete yet. And obviously that's going to pull down the roster numbers moving forward in a sport like baseball. So we'll get into that a little bit more as we move on. But certainly it's an interesting time during this early signing period for colleges all across the country. When we come back, we're going to talk about the playoff. The new playoff rankings are going to be released tonight. Christine and I, we've got our brackets on what we think it might look like. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Friday night's going to be busy in Fayetteville. The basketball team, as we mentioned, going to be back at Bud Walton Arena with an 8 o'clock tip-off against Little Rock. At 6:30 is when the Razorback soccer team will be in action again. They're going to be playing Cal on Friday night in the second round of the NCAA tournament. There will be a game that precedes that between Stanford and UConn. The winners of those two games will move on to play Sunday night in the third round of the NCAA tournament. There's also a high school playoff game at Harmon Field at the same time. And so there will be congestion there in that little area of Fayetteville.
Yeah, plus basketball, right?
Well, yeah, there's basketball. I mean, it's a football weekend. There are going to be a lot of people in town for that. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, it's going to be busy. Maybe if you're not going to any of those events, avoid the area.
Yeah, let everybody else who's there have some drive. It's always interesting how they try to stagger, and sometimes you can't avoid mm-hmm. starting games at the same time, but how they try to stagger the start times in that area. You know, so like the soccer game will start at 6:30, and none of this was really coordinated, I don't think, but the soccer game will start at 6:30. The high school playoff game will start at 7, which if you're not familiar with Fayetteville, Fayetteville High School's football field is literally right across the street from Bud Walton Arena and Razorback Field and all of those facilities right there in that little area right off of Stadium Drive. And then basketball is going to start at 8, but that's only because it's an SEC Network game. It's actually going to be a televised game instead of just one that's streamed.
Yeah, parking is going to be a mess because people share all those lots for all those different facilities. So that's not going to be fun.
No, it's going to be interesting. Their NCAA cross country meet is this weekend, not in Fayetteville, thank goodness. That's going to be in Madison, Wisconsin. The men and women will be running up there this weekend. They think the men have got a pretty good chance at winning an NCAA championship. They're ranked number 3 going into this.
Doesn't surprise me. I'd expect nothing less. I don't know. I haven't seen where the women are ranked.
Well, I'm not sure that they are ranked.
And, are they not?
I'm not sure how deep those rankings go. They may be a top 30, and mm-hmm. they may be in there toward the bottom. It was a surprise to, I think, some people, including myself, that they won the regional the other day. There was some question about whether or not they would even place in the first two, mm-hmm. which is what you've got to do to get to the NCAAs. Now, they've had some runners, some older runners, like a Sydney Thorvaldsen, who's been injured this year, and she's back. She's an All-American, and I think that's helping them. But both Arkansas teams will be running at the NCAA Cross Country Championships this weekend. Mentioned you got Razorback men's basketball in town this week. Women's basketball is going to be back in town on Thursday night playing Oral Roberts. It's a busy, busy weekend here in Fayetteville. It's that overlap season. There's a lot of stuff going on, it seems like, every day. All right, the college football playoffs are going to be, or the rankings are going to be announced tonight. And we expect there to be some changes. Tennessee obviously lost to Georgia last week. BYU got upset by Kansas last week. And so there's going to be some shifting. What is it going to look like? Well, here's my prediction. I think Blake's got it pulled up. I had to pull it up because I can't see my monitor because I'm not wearing my glasses. But, okay, here we go. I've got Oregon still at number one. I've got Texas still at number two. Miami, who I had at four last week, moves back to three. And I think Boise State moves into the four spot. Now, that doesn't mean I think Boise State is the fourth best team. But remember, in the rankings or in the college football playoff, rankings don't mean seedings. And so Boise State, because you know they're projected to be the highest-ranked Group of Five conference champion, they're in the playoff field in the first place. And I've got Colorado there at number 12 because I think Colorado jumps BYU this week. Even though Colorado has two losses, BYU's loss was to a three-win Kansas team. And I think they're going to get dinged pretty seriously for that. I don't know that the playoff committee was taking them that serious to begin with because they've had so many close calls. Colorado, they're playing well. I think Colorado gets in this field, even though I don't think they'll be in the top 12 of the rankings. I think they get into this field because they will be the projected Big 12 champion based on the rankings this week.
Yeah, I agree with that. I have Colorado in kind of the same position. I think they've kind of snuck up on me. I think they were a team, we've talked about a couple teams like this now, that got kind of written off after some early season weirdness, and then yeah. All of a sudden they're playing really well, and you go, oh, wait, they're actually, you know, they're in this thing. And I think after the way last season went, I think people got sick of talking about Colorado, sick of hearing about Colorado when they weren't good last year, and they are so much better this year.
So, Blake, if you'll put my bracket back up, I've got Ohio State playing Colorado. That'd be an awesome first-round matchup just in terms of, you know, you got the two coaches who – you know, most people seem to not like Dion. The likability, I think, is probably higher with him than it is with Ryan Day at Ohio State. 8-9, I've got Notre Dame hosting Alabama right now. In the 6-11 game, I got Penn State hosting Georgia. And in the 7-10 game, I've got Indiana hosting Ole Miss. It's really tough figuring out what to do with those two lost SEC teams right now. And I'd add A&M to that, you know, conversation, because yeah. If A&M beats Texas, they're in the playoff as long as they don't stump their toe somewhere else along the line. But you got Alabama, you got Ole Miss, Georgia, and Tennessee. And, yeah, there's some head-to-head comparisons you can do there. But, you know, Alabama beat Georgia, but Tennessee beat Alabama, but Georgia beat Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And then you got Ole Miss in there who's got the worst loss of anybody that's in the playoff consideration, that loss to Kentucky at home back in September. Part of this is, I think, based on the eye test. Part of it's based on what I think we saw the committee do last week in their rankings. I feel like Tennessee is the odd man out right now because I think Tennessee, they don't pass the eye test right now. Even though they beat Alabama head-to-head, they just don't feel like they pass the eye test right now. And, you know, with there having to be five conference champions, I think, you know, what you're probably going to see tonight is that Tennessee would be that first team out.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I totally agree about the eye test, especially when you compare it with some of these other SEC teams that are on a similar level. I just don't think that they are playing as well as some of these other teams, despite what the resume or record might say.
I looked this up, and I'm writing a column about this right now. Not as we speak, but I've got something ready that's going to go on our site in the next day or so. I think there are no fewer than 26 teams that still believe that they've got a playoff shot. Now, some of them are not very good playoff shot. It's three-loss Big 12 teams who are still clinging on to the hope that there can be chaos in front of them, who got the first dose of that on Saturday night when BYU lost to Kansas. You know, so there's about a handful of those that, you know, they're probably not getting in the playoff, but right now you can't rule them out because of the conference champion. But I mean, this is, and I said this last week, it's so much more enjoyable to have a sport where there are so many fan bases that are still engaged right now as we sit here in mid-late November, as opposed to the past several years when it felt like this time of the year, you were down to six or seven candidates.
100%. I mean, we wouldn't have been here sitting and talking about the playoff for as long last year, you know, A, because it was smaller, but B, because it felt like a foregone conclusion, you know, at this point in the year. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is so much, has so much more entertainment, so much more intrigue. I think, you know, there will be lots for different fan bases to be angry about, which they love to do. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
And there's a lot of teams that are in this bracket here that they may not make the playoff depending on how crazy the conference championship Saturday goes.
For sure.
Because basically that's kind of like a play end to the playoff that day. And you could get some teams that aren't really on our radar right now. Or, you know, some of the teams that seem like they're, you know, stuck there in that first one, two, three out and just can't seem to get enough push to get into this top 12, at least of the bracket. Teams like SMU, teams like Texas A&M, there's a number of those teams out there. All right, we're going to pull Christina's bracket up now.
Okay.
And
so
this reminds me of the first time that I voted for the Heisman. And I told somebody, you know, they said, well, what's your top, like, what would you vote? And I told them, like, well, that's certainly an interesting ballot. This is an interesting poll that Christina
has. Yes. So I did this differently. I did not do this based on what I think the ranking is going to look like tonight or based on, you know, I didn't do the bracket based on how I think they'll be ranked tonight.
Because we have no rules. This is just abstract.
Right. What I decided to do was look at the next 2 weeks of the regular season plus what I think will happen in conference championship games and go based off of what I think how the rest of the season is going to play out.
All right. Before you go any further, for people who aren't watching, let me just tell you what her bracket says. Ohio State 1. Alabama 2, Miami 3, Boise State 4. Now these are the seedings, not the rankings. The rest of the seedings would be, or the first round games based on Christina's bracket here would be Notre Dame at Oregon, Texas at Georgia in the 9-8 game, Colorado at Penn State in the 11-6, and Indiana at Ole Miss in the 10-7 game. All right.
Yeah, so the biggest bold prediction here is Alabama. And I have that because I have them, you know, based on the way I think the rest of the season will go, playing Texas in the SEC championship game.
Have you looked at the tiebreakers?
They're a little bananas.
Yeah, but I mean, like, have you figured out, is there a team, like if everything goes how we think it'll go over the final 2 weeks of the regular season, is there a team that's sitting prettiest, if you will, that would be like we get in a, say a five team tie break with two losses.
I think it's Alabama.
Okay. Why? Like what have they done that puts them in that position?
I think it has to do with their very, you know, how the head to head and then plus how they will take the common opponent aspect.
Okay.
And so I think if it is an Alabama Texas SEC championship, I think Alabama might win. We've talked about how we feel like Alabama is a team you don't really want to play right now. I feel like they are on an upward trajectory, and I feel like Texas is maybe going slightly downward.
Well, Texas still hadn't really played anybody.
Exactly. And so I think
other than Georgia, they haven't beaten anybody.
Yeah, I can see a world in which we have Alabama as the SEC champion. So that's what I went with here, because I think that's possible. I went with Miami. The ACC also has some weird tiebreaker situations, but right now they would, if everything goes according to plan, which none of the teams at the top of the ACC have super challenging games remaining, and Miami would get in over Clemson right now with the way their tiebreaker structure is. And
so who would play in the ACC championship? It'd be SMU against
SMU
Miami?
SMU and Miami. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think Miami would beat SMU. I think SMU is another one of those that, despite the record, I don't really think they passed the eye test. I think they're good. Mm-hmm. But I do think Miami is better. When you look at a lot of the metrics, you know, we've talked a lot about efficiency ratings, things like that. Miami on paper is better. Obviously, the games aren't played on paper. You never know what's going to happen. But I my projection would be Miami. I put Boise State at 4. I also think Colorado would be the Big 12 champion. This is one where I broke from what I think the committee would do in this situation. I think they would put Colorado in over Boise State, but I wouldn't want them to. So I put Boise State.
You're talking
State
about put them in as the
top
first round
four. Yes. As one of the top four seeds. That's what I mean. Colorado, I have them at 11. And so I think Boise State, I think they're really close in terms of strength of schedule, you know, some of the resume metrics we look at. Boise has better efficiency. I think they've controlled games better. Their only loss is to Oregon, and it was close, and it was on the road. You know, this would obviously require them to, you know, win out and then beat presumably UNLV in the Mountain West Championship.
Colorado State.
Yeah, or Colorado State. They've come on really strong. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do think that they will win the Mountain West. You know, if they don't, Army. We've got to watch out for Army. We have to see what happens there. And then I put Oregon at 5 because I have them finishing as Big Ten runner-up to Ohio State. And
that's going to be a rematch at this point.
Right. And that game was really close. Mm-hmm. And I think Ohio State is playing really well. I think Oregon is too, but I just think based on that, and then again, when you look at some of these metrics and the on-paper stuff, the matchup, I do think it favors Ohio State. Ohio State might be favored in that championship.
Well, there's
game.
Also the revenge factor.
Exactly.
I mean, the revenge factor. And, you know, this doesn't get talked a lot about, but, you know, Oregon, they went to Wisconsin the other day. And when you make long trips like that, I think it can affect your play. Doesn't mean it's always going to affect your play. Big Ten championship games in Indianapolis. That's mm-hmm. a short trip for Ohio State. That's a cross-country trip for Oregon.
It's true. It is something. It's something of note for sure.
You think they'll ever, you know, as these conferences become bigger, like you think they'll ever rotate the Big Ten championship? You know, like, hey, we're going to play it in Los Angeles.
Maybe.
Every third year or something.
They might, yeah. It's hard to do. Those doing stuff, you know, Los Angeles, I know you threw that out as a hypothetical, but it's really expensive to have events there. I think fan turnout can sometimes be tough because of how expensive it is to go there. So that's kind of stuff that they consider. But, I mean, they could. It's technically Big Ten country.
It is Big Ten, and that's the point. It's like
the whole West Coast, I mean, all the way up to Washington and Oregon.
Exactly. And so, you know, it feels like, I guess Indianapolis is kind of centrally located,
mm-hmm.
But it also feels like that's very old, like old way of thinking about the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
And those teams that are out on the West Coast, they made the decision to be in the Big Ten.
Yeah,
but there is a little bit of an isolation element there that, you know, I just wonder if it gets, if that ever becomes part of the conversation moving forward.
Yeah, it's possible.
I'd love to see the SEC championship rotate.
Mm-hmm.
It bothers me that the SEC championship always seems to favor the teams that are in the eastern part mm-hmm. of the conference. Arkansas has played there 3 times. And every time they played there, it has been basically a road game for them. They played Florida twice. They played Georgia once. You play Florida or Georgia in Atlanta, unless you're Florida or Georgia, there's the other team, or, you know, Alabama and Auburn. But the point being that you're not going to have, you know, it's going to be very one-sided in the stands. There are so many stadiums now in the SEC, whether it be, you know, in Dallas, Houston, New Orleans, Atlanta, Miami, Tennessee, or Nashville's building a new one that's going to have a roof on it. I mean, these are stadiums that are either in warm area places where you're probably going to have good weather, or they have a roof on top of them. Why not rotate it around between those stadiums? And I understand, like, the Big 12 championship is in Dallas every year, and so maybe that's not a viable
option.
They
could move it further west if they wanted to.
They could. They could, but it's like, you know, why not have some flavor?
Yeah.
You know, on your, and I would say the same thing with the SEC tournament. It bothers me that it's in Nashville every mm-hmm. year. I grew up where, you know, the SEC tournament, it was in Memphis one year, and then it would be in Atlanta, and then it would be in New Orleans, and then it would be wherever. And I like the rotating. SEC baseball tournament bothers me to no end that it's in Hoover every year.
bothers people to no end for many reasons.
But, you know, it's like, hey, you got all these great minor league ballparks mm-hmm. across the SEC footprint, whether it be you know, the Bricktown Ballpark in Oklahoma City now. Or
SEC tournament at All Rest Ballpark.
Well, they don't have enough seats, but you know, so basically, you got to find a stadium that has enough seating. But you know, there's stadiums down in Texas, minor league stadiums. There's the New Orleans AAA ballpark in New Orleans, and I could go on and on. There's all these great ballparks across the South where you could rotate this, and it doesn't become like this home event for mm-hmm. you know, 2 or 3 teams. And I don't know how I got up on that soapbox. It's not even baseball season, but
you're ready.
I am ready. I'd like to see these championship games rotate around. Yeah.
So with the rest of my bracket, you know, the
oh yeah, we're talking about
through,
brackets.
Yeah, yeah, football playoff. 6 through 12 really was really tough because, like you were saying, what to do with some of these 2-loss SEC teams is really hard. How to weigh them against some of these Big Ten teams is also really hard. You know, the situation that I was confronted with here was Penn State and Indiana out of the Big Ten. I have, you know, Indiana has to play Ohio State, I believe, in the last week of the season. No, the week before, because Ohio State, Michigan will be last week. So they, I have Indiana losing to Ohio State. So then, and Penn State winning out. So then they would have the same one loss. They would both have lost to Ohio State. So then looking at who else they've played, Penn State's schedule is so much stronger. They just have a much better resume. Indiana has played most of the bottom of the Big Ten, whereas Penn State has played some more upper to middle Big Ten teams. So I put Penn State at 6 and I put Indiana down at 10.
When you got 26 teams that can make the playoff, every game, it feels like, or most games, they've got some sort of playoff implication. But there's two big ones this week. Like you said, Indiana at Ohio State, and then there's Army and Notre Dame this week. And so both of those will be very interesting to watch and see how they play out. Will it be Notre Dame and Ohio State that both win? They're both going to be big favorites in those games. Or can Army and Indiana, you know, really take a step forward and add a data point to these undefeated records? It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Christina, thanks for being here. The rankings will come out tonight. We'll talk about them a little bit more tomorrow once they come out. We hope that you will visit us at wholehogsports.com until our next podcast, which will be tomorrow, as we said. Until then, hope you have a great day, everyone.